Hello, this is Chris English with another edition of our magazine programme At Home This Morning, which we hope will provide you with a window to our world, both in and around our city of Brighton Hove and further afield, all for both our older listeners and those not so old. In this programme will be a preview of the latest musical theatre offering from Brighton Theatre Group, which, complete with Flying Car, will be opening at the Brighton Theatre Royal later this month. We'll also have news on a real old-fashioned village fair that's happening just along the coast in Rottingdean, and we'll be joined by Caroline Ray from the Blue Cross Animal Charity with details on how you can make sure that your pets stay safe in hot weather. And to cap it all off, there'll be news on how you could possibly save a large sum of money on the annual cost of a mobile phone. But to start things off, what memories do these sounds remind you of? The unmistakable sounds of the Spitfire's mighty Rolls-Royce Merlin engine, and in particular the silver Spitfire that is about to set off on a 27,000-mile journey around the world. And joining us on the telephone from the aeroplane's base at Goodwood Aerodrome in West Sussex is pilot Stephen Boultby-Brooks. Good morning, Steve. Can you tell us a bit about the project?
We've been running a Spitfire school down at Goodwood here for about 10 years. We have a two-seat Spitfire, and we take people up with about 500 or 600 people a year. And we've been amazed by the effect it has on people. A lot of them burst into tears. Some of them roar with laughter, and others are just blown away with how much it affects their feelings and their emotions. And so over the years, we've been watching this and recording this, and then suddenly we realized this phenomena is not just a British thing. This is a worldwide phenomena. People love the Spitfire. So the idea is to take this silver Spitfire around the world and let other people hear that Merlin engine roaring through their skies.
And just around the world, how do you fly that? Because presumably the Spitfire hasn't got that long a duration of flight.
You're absolutely right, Chris. It was built as an interceptor. It usually does 300 or so nautical miles range. But we've taken out the machine guns, we've polished the whole plane up, and we've got up to about 1,000-mile range.
So that's amazing. But it's still a long way around the world. So you're obviously going to do it in lots of hops.
That's right. We've got about 90 flights, 30 countries, 27,000 miles to go.
And what the reaction from countries that you're going to visit, what do they think of this eccentric British gentleman, can we say, flying a Spitfire into their airspace? What's the reaction?
Well, it's two pilots, it's Matt Jones and myself, and their reaction is that, of course, the Spitfire played such a vast role in world history, and so their first reaction is to look at what roles the Spitfire played in their country. So if you cross India or Myanmar or Southeast Asia, the Spitfire worked in all of these places, and they run to their record books. And so what we're trying to do is get people to recall how magnificent this machine was and why it stands for freedom of humanity itself.
And I mentioned that noise that the Rolls-Royce Merlin engine makes. Is that recognised the world over as well?
Yeah. There was only one Merlin. It's 27 litres. There has never been an engine like it. And when you hear it, you'll never hear anything else that sounds similar. So I think it's not necessarily recognised, but when it's heard, it's never forgotten.
And what about the danger of a trip like that? Because presumably there's long stretches over water.
Yeah, there are stretches over water. We've been training with the Navy, who've been fantastic, and the RAF, who've been giving us training on how to parachute into water, how to survive. We were in Yeovilton last week, being turned upside down in the Dunker to learn how to escape from water. So we've done quite a lot of training on these things.
And you talk about upside down in water. Now, if you're upside down in water, that means you've crashed. So the aircraft is valuable. I mean, you can't buy these things these days, let alone make them from scratch. So what's the cost of a Spitfire these days? If you went out to buy a replacement, what would it cost you?
That's a good question. And this Spitfire in particular, we had to completely rebuild. So it did 51 sorties in the war, and then it has been in a museum for most of its life. And we took it out and stripped it down, drilled out 80,000 rivets. And with the help of IWC, the International Watch Company, who's sponsoring us, we've gone through panel by panel and checked every single detail and rebuilt it over 2 years. So it's now in fully flying condition, as it was in period, totally original. As to value, it's very hard to say.
And what about the cost generally? Fuel isn't cheap, and even in the Middle East, it's still a price, isn't it? So how much is the whole expedition going to cost?
It's going to be quite... It's hard to put a figure on the actual expedition, but it's not a cheap endeavor, as you point out. And funnily enough, in the Middle East, would you believe it's really hard to get avgas in Saudi Arabia? You'd have thought fuel would be plentiful out there, but that's some of our hardest logistical planning at the moment.
And Steve, when does it all happen? When do you actually embark on this amazing trip?
Well, we'll be leaving here on the 5th of August from Goodwood. About 1:30 in the afternoon, we'll be setting off to start the expedition, which is going to take about 4 months.
And people can get more information. Is there a website?
Well, the thing to put in is the Silver Spitfire into Google, either silverspitfire.com or IWC.com, and you will be able to follow the Silver Spitfire, see exactly where we are and how the trip's going.
Steve, thanks very much for joining us, and bon voyage.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
We were hearing from Steve Boultby-Brooks from Goodwood, who's just about now embarking on that epic round-the-world sortie in his Silver Spitfire. While the writer of the James Bond stories, Ian Fleming, may never have flown Spitfires, his hero, James Bond, could quite well have done so. And although there isn't an aircraft, unless you call a hot air balloon an aircraft, in Fleming's Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, there is a flying car, a vehicle that will be shoehorned onto the Theatre Royal stage later this month. And I interrupted rehearsals for the show a few days ago to find out what was going on. Here, from Brighton Theatre Group, our director Michael Burney and choreographer Jodie Michelle. Michael, this is a truly mammoth show. How different will it be from the well-known and much-loved film?
It's slightly different than the film, only slightly different. I mean, the story is still the same about the car and about the children wanting the car, and the car flies. So the story, majority of the songs are the same as the film, and the Sherman Brothers had written a few extra songs for the musical at the Palladium and the tour. But I don't think the audience are going to be disappointed. Sometimes when they take from a film to a musical, they do a lot of things, and sometimes you don't even recognise it. I think they will definitely recognise this, be very similar to the film.
And how much of a challenge for you as director?
Ooh, I think the challenge is the size of it, because I've done quite a few productions at the Theatre Royal, some huge ones with flying people, flying cast members, that is, huge cast. That doesn't kind of bother me. What this is the challenging. This is a flying car, but the challenge is just the amount of people that we have, over 100 people plus dogs. So it's a challenge on the organisation of it all and coordinating everyone and the management of everyone and just keeping it all together. That's been the challenge, and that will be the challenge over these next few weeks.
And you say over 100 people in the cast.
We do, not on stage. I think we've only 75 at one time because we've got two teams of sewer children, 25 in a team. So although all the sewer children have to come to every rehearsal to watch each other, and tonight we've got rehearsal tonight, and one group will do act one and one group will do act two. Tonight we're going to have 100 cast members and a production team at the front, maybe of say 10, and when everyone gets here, another 10. So at some rehearsals, probably about 120 in the room, and dogs and dog owners as well, who are sat there waiting for tonight's rehearsal. So that's going to be interesting.
During the show itself, what can people expect? You talk about a flying car. Will it really fly?
It absolutely does, Chris. I'm not going to tell you the magic of it, but it really does. It's beautiful. We've seen the car, and it really, really does fly. It's very magical, and I think there's going to be a huge gas. And actually, when you first see the car, it's called the Reveal of Chitty. And we call it the Superman music because it's this big, dramatic music, and you first see Chitty, and I'm sure it's going to get a huge round of applause because just the car itself is beautiful, absolutely beautiful. But then when, at the end of Act 1, it then flies over Beachy Head and over the English Channel, it'll be spectacular.
Can't wait. And the lady concerned with the choreography, Jodie Michelle.
Hi.
And how much of a challenge is it? Because on a film set, yes, you can be as large as a director likes.
Yeah. Well, I think the challenge, echoing to what Michael said, it is because of the sheer amount of people on the stage. We've got a lot of cast members, and it's the organisation of everybody on the stage and the patterning, and also to create in the film, especially like the bamboo, where you've got everybody going on at the same time, and then you've got the fairground, and you've got to try and create that the dancing is going on with the bamboo and the bamboo sticks, as well as trying to create the scenes around. It's difficult to put that on stage, but I think we kind of got there.
And the show has got some very well known numbers. You talk about bamboo.
Yes.
With meal bamboo.
Yes.
And what about another well-known number, Toot Sweets?
Toot Sweets, yeah. We've got the famous Toot Sweets, which is fantastic. Some brilliant costumes with that, so that's going to be great. We've got a few new songs that Michael was saying that has been written for the actual musical, so it's not actually in the film, but I think which is a lovely samba number, I think the audience will enjoy that though. So yeah, it's nice that we've got completely different styles going on through the thing.
And does that make your job harder or easier?
It makes it more challenging, but more exciting as well, yeah. So.
And going back to Michael, Michael, why should people come and see Chitty Bang Bang? They've seen the show on the film, so why should they come to the Theatre Royal later this month?
You're right, Chris. I think the film, Christmas Day, film was on, and the musical has never been in Brighton. The musical was at the Palladium, and the tour, I think, came to Southampton. So it's never been in Brighton, and we are on in August, so I can just imagine what Brighton's going to be like in August, the amount of holidaymakers desperate to do something with their children. And not just children, I think it reaches a huge audience of adults as well, who, like myself, was one of my favourite films, Wizard of Oz, Chitty Bang Bang, as a child. So to actually see it on stage, I think it'll appeal to everyone.
We're hearing from director Michael Burney and choreographer Jodie Michelle. But now it's turn of the four main characters. Rob Peart, who plays crazy inventor Caracatus Potts, Hannah Williams, who takes on the role of Truly Scrumptious, plus Jeremy and Jemima, the children who get to ride the car. They are Libby Bradley and James Keeley. But first, as you hear, Rob took me to task for the pronunciation of his character's name. Caractacus Pop.
Well, let's pronounce it right, shall we? Caractacus. Nobody can manage it. Ridiculous name, isn't it, Hannah?
I quite like it.
How difficult is it to follow in the footsteps of somebody like Michael Ball, of course, Dick Van Dyke?
Dick Van Dyke is the person that I'm following in the footsteps of. I think everybody's following in his footsteps. So although Michael Ball was a very high benchmark, Dick Van Dyke is who we're all following, really. So, and to answer your question, it's impossible to follow him. So you have to make the part your own, which is what Michael Ball did. And Jason Manford is the only other one I can remember who's played it, but I'm sure many other people have played it, and they've all had to take it their own way. Very difficult part to do, because everybody's expecting Dick Van Dyke.
As you say, a difficult part, but what can we expect from your version?
What can you expect from my version? Well, some honesty. I think there's going to be... I made a conscious decision not to put any accent on, so you'll hear me as I am. I'm not going to put a fake Northern accent on, or American like Dick Van Dyke is. So you'll get my best acting and my best singing. That's it, really.
And have you got a favourite song?
Well, Hush by Mountain is the song of the show for me. So to make that my own is exciting. But, I mean, my favourite song is The Old Bamboo, I think. It's a very exciting song.
And very, very exhausting, I would think.
Yes, I've had to try and keep fit for that one, especially for all the jumping over poles. Oh, spoiler there. But, yeah, a lot of fun for that one.
And Truly Scrumptious is played by Helen Williams.
Hello.
Hello. So, Hannah, not so star-studded a character to follow, but what's in it for you?
Yeah, certainly it's not quite as iconic as Dick Van Dyke, but it's a lovely part, and it's a part that I watched the film all the time when I was young, and I loved it, and I always wanted to... particularly the Doll on a Music Box number, I think, is quite iconic, and lots of people remember that number and that routine, and I used to practice it in the mirror when I was a little girl trying to pretend to be the doll on the music box, so I'm really thrilled to be playing it.
And now you are.
Yeah, very excited.
So is that your favourite song?
Yeah, it probably is my favourite number in the show. I love, it's not a number that I'm in, but my actual favourite number in the show is Roses of Success, which lots of people might not know, but it's really good fun. It's a really great number.
And the children, you, all of a sudden you've got two children.
Yes, and I don't really like children, so I'm very good at acting in this show. Not really, they're lovely, they're really great, the children. We've got two teams of principals, and all four of them are excellent, so it's been really fun.
Right. Let's have a quick chat and start ladies first. Libby, tell me a bit about your part. Do you get to do any dancing?
A little bit. We do it in one called Toot Sweets, and we do a bit of dancing in that, but otherwise it's mainly acting.
And what's singing. It like riding in the car?
Very exciting, but also a bit nerve-wracking.
A bit scary?
Yeah.
But you're looking forward to it?
Yes.
Have you got a favourite number in the show?
I like the... I'm not in it, but I like the Old Bamboo one. But I love the Truly Scrumptious one number.
Finally, James.
I love being in the show, like sitting in the car. It's just so amazing. And I think to myself every day, it's amazing that I'm in this show that's going to be performed at the Theatre Royal.
And have you done much acting before?
No, I've never been in a production as big as this, but I've been the main characters in a few school plays.
Right. And what's your favourite character?
Probably Truly Scrumptious.
Wait.
Because I love Doll on a Music Box.
The final word, I think, ought to go to Hannah Williams, Truly Scrumptious. If somebody was thinking about going to see the show and not quite sure, why should they come?
Oh, they should definitely come. We've got everything. We've got a flying car, for starters. There's over 50 people on stage. The cast is incredible. There's so much talent in this cast. So it's going to be lots of fun, lots of singing, dancing. We've got dogs, children, lots of tunes that you'll know and love. So everyone should definitely come along. It's a great, great day out for the whole family.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, a show that flies into the Theatre Royal Brighton for just 8 performances at 2:30 and 7:30 each day, from Wednesday the 21st to Saturday the 24th of August. Now, heat is very nice, but not everybody's cup of tea, particularly if you're an animal, a dog going on walks on red-hot pavements. Joining us on the telephone is Caroline Ray from Blue Cross. Good morning.
Good morning.
And just that, are animals in danger from all this lovely sunshine?
Yes, unfortunately they are. I mean, you mentioned earlier about hot pavements, and yes, I think that's going to come as a little bit of a shock to pet owners in the UK, because we are getting a very sudden spike of heat, and we're just not used to the fact that pavements, rocks and concrete surfaces might be so hot that they can blister our pets' feet. So at the Blue Cross, we're urging people to check the temperature of the surface with a hand or a bare hand or a bare foot before they allow their pet to walk on it. But that's not the only risk. All of the other usual risks of hot weather apply. Then again, I think, you know, particularly because of the fact that that animals haven't really had time to acclimatise, because this is the first really hot weather we've had, and it's going to appear quite suddenly. There are risks of heat stroke, and that's particularly the case if you happen to have an elderly or overweight dog, or a dog that's on medication, or one of the short-nosed breeds like French bulldogs. You've got to be really, really careful with them in this warm weather. Even if the dog still seems keen to go out and keen to run around after a ball, you know, like some people, they just don't realise that they've done too much until they're literally, you know, collapsing.
And if your animal does suffer from something, what are the symptoms? How can you tell that there's a problem?
You often see as the first sign that they're panting a lot, they start to become a little bit confused and wobbly. And if that's the case, then the best thing to do is to get some water onto the coat and get the animal out of the sun and into an area where there's a cool breeze, and then immediately phone your vet.
And, of course, one of the issues is, isn't it, keeping animals in locked cars where they're very hot with little or no ventilation?
I think it would be foolish to keep an animal in a car even with ventilation, given that the temperature is supposed to peak at over 30. And I really, cars can get so hot so quickly that even somebody who thinks they're prepared can be caught out and caught unawares. And, the last thing you want to do is to, get back from being out doing some activity and then come back to find your dog is dead in the car.
I mean, is it literally that serious? Can they die?
Yes, absolutely, they can.
And so if you've got an animal and you've got to leave the vehicle, what can you do? Because some places won't accept animals.
No, the best thing to do is to leave the pet at home. You know, it's best not to take it out with you in the first place. Why run the risk? I mean, you can leave your animal, you can leave your dog at home with water, shade and ventilation. And they'll be perfectly happy on their own. You know, it's best not to run the risk. You know, you can never be too sure of exactly what's going to happen in a car.
And if you're a passerby and you see an animal in a locked car where it's very, very warm, are you able to break a window?
Your best advice is to dial 999 and talk to the police.
Right, so don't take action yourself, otherwise you could...
No, always dial 999 first, otherwise I believe you can find yourself guilty of a criminal offence.
Right, and turning back to animals generally and this lovely weather, are there some basic rules?
Well, there's a few sort of surprising things that come up. For example, obviously everybody's going to have their windows and their balcony doors open in the hot weather to try and get a through breeze into their house. But just be careful because of the fact that animals, particularly if they're not used to, outdoor access, or the young animals particularly seem to be at risk. There is a very real risk that cats and even dogs can fall from heights. You know, they can fall off windowsills or off balconies. And, it doesn't happen very often, but when it does, the injuries that they sustain can often be really devastating. I mean, we had a little cat, Oscar, that came into our Victoria Hospital. It was touch and go about whether he was going to survive at all, and he had to have a leg amputated. And I can't imagine how upsetting it must be as an owner to find your cat lying badly injured at the bottom of a block of flats. So it's worth being really, really careful. But we know that actually, far too few pet owners put up protective grills or netting to stop their animals from falling. And so that would be one of my top tips.
And other tips?
Essential at that access to water at all times for all pets. Just bearing in mind that if your animal is a little bit elderly and arthritic, they may be feeling rather lethargic in this weather. And so make sure that the water is close by. And if you have rabbits and guinea pigs, those animals are really very susceptible to hot temperatures. Absolutely vital that their hutches and cages aren't in direct sunlight. So do think about them as well, because they again can just suddenly die from heat stroke.
And if you feel that your animal has suffered in some way from heat or even burnt paws, are Blue Cross there to help?
All vets are obliged to provide a 24-hour-a-day service to deal with emergencies like that. And I absolutely would advise anybody who thinks that their pet has heat stroke to contact their vet, because even if the animal appears to have recovered, it may still need treatment. So it's really, really important. Just moving away from that, I mean, obviously we want people to have fun. And one thing that you might like to think about doing is getting a paddling pool for your dog in the back garden. I mean, that can be a lot of fun for your dog and for all of the family as well.
Caroline, thank you very much for joining us. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
We were hearing from Caroline Ray from Blue Cross with some advice for pet owners in the hot weather. And from cats and dogs to mobile phones. Well, it's quite a step. Quite a giant step for mankind. Now, where have I heard that before? But now, thanks to new legislation from Watchdog Ofcom, you could save over £200 by switching your supplier. It used to be a nightmare. But joining us now to explain why that's no longer the case is Priya Sinar from Carphone Warehouse.
Well, previously, switching network providers whilst keeping your preferred number was a bit of a switching nightmare and could take up to 2 working days on average, with 51% of people finding the whole experience quite difficult. So the new legislation, which was introduced by Ofcom on the 1st of July, means it's easier than ever for consumers to switch network providers whilst keeping their preferred number. And at Carphone Warehouse, we found that millions of people could save an average of £228 by switching contracts, and the new legislation tackles that. So as a customer, all you would need to do is 3 simple steps, which is to text the word PACK for free to the number 65075. The customer receives their PACK code within as little as a minute, plus account details to pass to the new provider. And within 1 working day, the consumer's old service ends and the new one begins. So really simple and easy.
I mean, it sounds almost too good to be true. I have to say that I'm one of those people. I have the same supplier, network supplier, and the same phone number that I've had since mobile phones arrived on the scene. So am I one of those people that would benefit?
Most definitely. If you've never sort of looked around in the past every time your 2-year contract ends, then, you know, you would be one of those people who could potentially save lots of money by looking elsewhere. That's not always the case, but, you know, the legislation, this new legislation means it's a double whammy win of money saving for consumers, because it's easier to switch networks but keep your number, which is really important. Like you've said, you've had your number for years, so it's easier to save money than ever before. And the networks will likely offer even better deals as they compete even harder, both for, you know, upgrading customers like yourself who have always stayed with their network provider, or for those who are looking for a better deal.
And where can you go to get advice? One of your stores, presumably, which is where my current phone came from.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. So consumers can visit our website at carphonewarehouse.com, or, like yourself, pop into a local store and see if we can save some money. Our people are experts, and our whole mission is to help people find the best phone, find the best network, and find the best deal for them.
Now, of course, a lot of people use the end of their contract to upgrade their phone to the next model or a different model or whatever. Will that still be possible?
Of course. Nothing's changed along those lines. You can still have a look at what your upgrade options are with your current service provider. And with the new legislation, you know, we're hoping that it means better deals for loyal customers. But you can also, at the same time, by popping into one of our stores, because we have all the networks under one roof and we're totally unbiased and impartial in the advice we'll give you, is look at the other deals that are available to you as well, which may be cheaper, and you get that new handset that you've come in for.
And are these only contract deals? In other words, people have got pay-as-you-go, will that still work?
Customers who have got pay-as-you-go, who would like to switch maybe to a different pay-as-you-go provider, again, the PAC code will still apply for them. whereby they can take their preferred number to a new network provider, because maybe that new network provider is offering a better deal on the pay-as-you-go for them.
Now, you mentioned a PAC code. Is that PAC as in parcel?
Sorry, PAC as in P-A-C.
Right.
It stands for porting authority code. So basically, in order to move your number from one network to another, you need to get that code.
And how can you get that code?
So again, it's a three simple step process where a customer texts the word PAC, P-A-C, for free to 65075. Customer receives their PAC code within as little as a minute, plus the account details to pass to a new provider. And within a working day, the consumer's old service ends and the new one begins.
And is there a chance, is there a cooling off period if people say, oh, I didn't mean to do that? Can they do that?
Of course they can. You know, with any contract, there's normally a cooling off period because maybe the service may not be what you expected or you might have any problems, etc. So you normally have a 14-day cooling off period with your network in which to you can refund or exchange the product. You won't lose your number because obviously that's going to be really important for everybody. And it would just revert, they'd give you a PAC code again to be able to take somewhere else.
And finally, that number today, that PAC code number?
It's 65075.
And that's all you need to do?
That's all you need to do. Text for free from your phone. Go out, have a look at the better deals that are out there for you. Try and save some money. You know, like we've said already, on average, we found at Carphone Warehouse that millions of people can save, on average, £228 just by switching contracts.
On my way to the store right away. Thank you for joining us. Priya Sanar was explaining how mobile phone users could save large sums of money simply by switching supplier. For our final item in this edition of At Home This Morning, we take a journey just along the coast to Rotting Dean, where on the village green, just by the pond, I spoke to the organiser of the village's annual fair, Graham Shepherd, and he now explains why they don't really suffer from being on the same day as the huge Brighton Pride procession.
Well, it's been established for many, many years. In fact, the first fair was in 1925, and it's always on the first Saturday in August. And we did debate about changing it, but in fact, the two work well together, really. You know, you get sort of families coming here, then sometimes people go to Pride and come back here. So, in fact, one advertises the other, really. So it's a bonus in both directions, in a sense, yeah.
And between you, you make sure the weather's fine.
Well, I start praying about now, actually. In fact, I looked at the long-range weather forecast about 3 days ago. My heart sunk because it said rain. But then I looked again yesterday and it had changed and it was sunshine. So I felt better about the whole thing. But yes, the weather, we're very dependent on the weather, yes.
So what goes on in the village fair?
Well, the main thing is to sort of be a happy occasion, really. And the byproduct is raising a lot of money for charity. I mean, this year we've got about 70 stalls, and it's a mixture of commercial stalls and charity community stalls, and a real mixture. And we have vintage good, crafts, a fun fair, a barbecue, arts and crafts and games, swing boats. And the idea is everybody to enjoy it in such a lovely surroundings here, and at the same time make money for charity, really. So it's a works both ways, yes.
I mean, we're sitting on the village green, yeah. Pond on one side,
yes,
and
yeah.
Rudyard Kipling's garden on the
yes.
other. So even if the fair wasn't here, it's a wonderful place to be.
It is indeed. I mean, we're very, very lucky, and it's absolutely idyllic because we sort of take up all of the village green, and the Lions have their barbecue adjacent to the pond, so people sit here with a pint of beer or a cup of tea or whatever, and then there's further stalls inside the Kipling Gardens. And also this year, the Croquet Club are going to let people come onto the croquet lawns and have a go at croquet. So it's expanding every year, really, and getting different. So it should be a lovely occasion.
When do you start planning?
Oh, I start planning almost as soon as the other one, sort of this year's, finishes, really. And it's just sort of step by step. We're only a small committee of about three of us, and then some other villagers, and it gradually sort of takes shape. And then I start doing a little panic about 2 weeks before, checking things out. But generally, it all comes together. And I wander around on the day and I feel it's just lovely. It's just a lovely thing, really, yeah.
So we know when it is. It's Saturday the 3rd of August.
Yes.
And what time?
Well, it starts at 10:30 and there's car parking available up on Hilda's Field, which is just round the corner from the field. But obviously it's a very good bus service and it goes on to till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so it's quite a nice, pleasant day.
And generally people come along, are they villagers or are they outsiders?
A real mixture. I think we get people from the Deans, from Wooding Dean, Peacehaven, Salt Dean, some come from across Brighton, and some come from all over. Interesting, I didn't say when I was talking about the stalls, there's a lady who comes from Japan, and she comes every year. She didn't come last year because she had a grandchild born, but she comes every year all the way from Japan to do a dance in the display area and also do a stall of paper folding, so it's quite remarkable. But no, and people come from all over. Yes, yeah, a real mix.
So what is it about Rotting Dean that makes it special like that?
I don't know. It's sort of a, I always say it's this word, a quintessentially English place, really, because it's a village by the sea, as Kipling said. And when we're looking across here and we can see the elms where Kipling lived, the church just there, and the grange there, and the plough on the pond. It's just a very pleasant place to be, really. And it's right that everybody in Brighton should come along here and enjoy it and all be together, really, and whatever age or whatever, yeah.
And, of course, you've got a museum here as well.
We have indeed, yeah. It's over in the grange. And that's upstairs. It's got a film exhibition at the moment, an exhibition of Kipling, and all sorts of things. It's a very interesting place to visit, yes.
And will that be open?
Not absolutely sure, Chris. I think it will be. It normally is. And, yes, and so people can wander from here and go across there and look at that at the same time. And the church will be open as well, so that's nice to go and look at.
So generally something for everybody?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's the aim, really, to make it that people can come, adults can come and relax with a tea, beer, scone, and children can go on the fun fair or play the different games like pig racing and all different things like that. And there's bees here. There's all here because the theme is wear a hat, any hat, and we're doing paper folding to make a hat. So we're hoping everybody at the end of the day will be wearing some sort of hat.
And we can hear children in the background having just come out of school.
Yeah, so, school, yes. Yes.
So is there something for children?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, as I say, the fun fair. And all sorts of stalls, tombolas. You can try yourself at lawn bowls, which the children love. And entertainment. There's entertainment all the way through the day from 10:30 till 4. And there's ukulele, the Salvation Army, the Round Room Ramblers folk group, Zumba, maypole dancing. And that was at the first fair in 1925. And all sorts of other things. It's a really lovely day out.
I was talking there to Graham Shepherd about Rotting Dean Village Fair. And of course, if you're listening to the repeat of this programme, then I'm afraid you'll have missed it. But put a note in your diary for next year. It's always the same day as Brighton Pride. Richard, do you ever remember the Spitfire?
I don't, I'm afraid. I was born just after the end of the war in 1946, so I have seen Spitfires around at air shows and places like that, but I don't ever remember hearing them flying over, going into action, as it were.
I mean, they're an amazing machine, and that noise from that Rolls-Royce engine, it's just the spine tingles every time I hear it.
Yes, I always thought it must be rather noisy for the pilots in the cockpit there, because it seems to me that they didn't have any sort of silencer on it, so you just get the damped roar of the engine coming out into the air, and it must have gone straight into the pilot's ears.
Absolutely, and of course, they're very basic. I mean, they're literally just a tin cigar case with a huge engine in the front and some machine guns in the wings. I mean, it's an amazing creation, and there were hundreds, if not thousands, of them built during the war.
Yes, it was an amazingly successful aircraft, wasn't it? I've seen the film about it. What was it called? The First of the Few?
Yeah.
About how the Spitfire was designed, and it was designed on completely new principles, wasn't it? The designer, whose name I can't remember at the moment, decided he'd go back to the shape of a bird's wing for the wings of the Spitfire, rather than just using a flat piece of metal sticking out each side like other designers had done, and that greatly improved the aerodynamics of the machine.
I mean, they were incredible machines. And that's where we must leave this edition of At Home This Morning. There's just time for me to repeat those all-important contact details. For more information on the Silver Spitfire Round the World project in a Spitfire, simply go to www.silverspitfire.com. For tickets to go and see Titty Titty Bang Bang at the Theatre Royal Brighton, You can either go along to the box office yourself in New Road and at the same time avoid the booking fee, or go online to www.atgtickets.com. For details on how to keep your pets safe and sound, go to www.bluecross.org.uk. And there'll be more information on switching your mobile phone supplier on www.ofcom.org.uk. And finally, for more details about Rottingdean Village Fair, email rottingdeanvillagefair@gmail.com. You're listening to At Home This Morning, a programme for older listeners and those not so old. We are Grey Matters Productions, and if you visit our website, which is greymattersproductions.org.uk, you can listen again to a selection of our most recent programmes. At this point, I must again thank my executive producer, Richard Davis, for all the technical operation matters. And now it's time for me to go. We meet again over the airwaves in about 4 weeks' time, but don't forget that Richard will be here again with another edition in just 2 weeks. So until we meet again, this is Chris English signing off as usual, with make sure you keep safe and not too warm.